and welcome to this week's Expert HR podcast with me, Ellie Gelder. Now, annual leave is one of the most highly valued benefits for employees, and if managed effectively, it can also benefit employers by improving employee engagement and maintaining productivity. So what sort of annual leave entitlements are employers giving their staff? With me to discuss new research from Expert HR's 2017 survey on annual leave and holiday pay is benchmarking editor Michael Carty. And staying with the theme of holiday, principal employment law editor Stephen Simpson also joins us to give us an update of the case law on holiday pay, which up until recently has caused a great deal of confusion for some employers. Let's start by looking at the survey data then. Michael, what are the headline findings from the latest Expert HR survey?
Well, at first glance, there's been little change when it comes to the amount of annual leave on offer. The median basic annual holiday entitlement, excluding bank or public holidays, is 25 days. This is the same as the figure recorded by Expert HR in 2016 and in each of the previous five surveys of annual leave that we've conducted since 2007.
So the headline finding is quite stable. Were there any differences to be seen by delving deeper into the results data?
Yes, a closer look at the data shows a clear division between the public sector and the private sector. Public sector employees enjoy more generous amounts of holiday than their private sector counterparts.
How so?
Well, the median holiday entitlement in the public sector is 28 days per year, compared with 25 days in the private sector. It's possible that some public sector employers could be increasing holiday entitlements in response to ongoing pay restraint.
Annual leave can have a major impact on employee engagement and retention, so that would make sense.
Exactly. As you said in your introduction, annual leave is one of the most highly valued benefits for employees in all sectors. Employers can set themselves apart by going beyond the statutory minimum requirements.
And just to remind our listeners, the statutory minimum holiday entitlement under the Working Time Regulations is 5.6 weeks paid annual leave. That works out as 28 days leave for full-time employees working 5 days a week, and that would include all public holidays.
That's right. We found that most employers are going beyond the statutory minimum. We collected data on holiday entitlements for more than 900 employee groups across 543 organisations, and more than four-fifths of those employee groups have a basic annual holiday entitlement above the statutory minimum.
What sort of range of holiday entitlements are on offer once you get beyond the 20-day minimum?
The most common holiday entitlement is 25 days per year, which applies to exactly a third of employee groups across the whole sample. Most employee groups with holiday entitlements above the statutory minimum tend to be grouped around the 25 days level, with between 21 days and 30 days holiday per year. But around 1 in 20 groups enjoy much more generous entitlements, which go from 31 days up to a maximum of 90 days.
Gosh, 90 days, that is generous.
The two highest holiday amounts in our sample, that's 85 days and 90 days, were both for teachers at independent schools, whose entitlements take school holidays into account. In fact, we found that nearly all very high holiday entitlements were for employee groups working in the education sector.
So while the headline annual leave entitlement may not change since 2007, it sounds like there's a wide diversity of approaches out there. Does the survey data show any other key ways that employers are setting themselves apart on annual leave?
Yes, around two-thirds of employers offer additional holiday entitlement as paid annual leave. The most common approach is to provide one or more days leave between Christmas Eve and New Year's Eve, in addition to the usual bank or public holidays over the festive period.
Okay, and what other kinds of additional paid leave are being offered?
Well, other popular types of additional leave are one or more days leave for house moves and a day off on the employee's birthday or wedding day. And so-called duvet days are also quite popular.
So duvet days, that's when the employee can take paid leave without notice and without justification or explanation. Are there any other ways that employers are boosting their holiday entitlements?
Half of employers provide additional holiday entitlements for length of service. This approach is particularly popular in the public sector, where it's offered by three-fifths of employers.
Does the data show any trends in how employers are rewarding length of service?
Well, there's almost as many different approaches to length of service accrual as there are employers offering it, but some distinct trends emerge from the data. The most common service milestones to be rewarded are 5 years and 10 years service. The amount of extra leave on offer tends to range between 1 day and 5 days.
And what does the survey reveal about holiday pay?
Again, there's a wide diversity of approaches out there. Holiday pay should always reflect the amount a worker would expect to earn over the period taken as holiday. Therefore, a lot of the specifics depend on the types of pay employers are taking into account when they're calculating holiday pay. This has been a hotly debated topic in HR with a lot of case law on the subject.
And Stephen Simpson's going to be talking about that in just a moment. Before we hear from Stephen, what does the survey reveal about the types of pay being used in holiday pay?
Just under a third of employers base holiday pay on basic pay only, which makes for a relatively straightforward calculation. Things are more complex for the other two-thirds of employers who take more than one type of pay into account in holiday pay calculations.
So what other types of pay beyond basic pay are employers using to calculate holiday pay?
The most common are shift premia and payments for voluntary overtime, with around a fifth of employers either including these types of pay in holiday pay or planning to. After those, the next most common types of pay that employers are including or planning to include are standby or call-out payments and commission payments.
Is there any evidence that the case law is influencing the types of pay included in holiday pay?
Yes, a fifth of employers in our survey said recent case law has had an impact.
So what sort of impact is the case law having?
The main impact that we found is around the inclusion of voluntary overtime payments and commission payments in holiday pay. Around half of employers who said case law has had an impact either currently include or plan to include these types of pay in holiday pay.
Thanks, Michael. Where can our listeners find out more?
Subscribers to Expert HR Benchmarking can access the complete results data from the survey to see how their organisation compares. And you can also read more about the survey findings on Expert HR.
Moving on now, Stephen, to the legal side of annual leave. What stage are we at with the case law on holiday pay?
So the long line of cases on holiday pay dating back to 2011 has now petered out. So it's clear from the case law now that employers that pay staff extra above basic pay must now include more than just basic pay when calculating payments during annual leave.
And that includes commission and overtime.
Yes, so commission must be included, according to the European Court of Justice ECJ decision in Locke and British Gas.
And the Locke case came back to the UK courts for them to apply the ECJ decision to UK law, didn't it?
That's right. So both the EAT and the Court of Appeal accepted that UK law can be interpreted to require employers to include commission in holiday pay.
So is that the end of the Locke case?
So British Gas did seek permission to appeal to the UK Supreme Court, but permission was denied in February, so the Court of Appeal decision stands.
So that's commission. What about overtime?
So in terms of overtime, the key case there is the EAT decision in Berwick, Scotland and Fulton, in which the EAT said that non-guaranteed overtime must be included in holiday pay calculations.
And Bear Scotland was limited to overtime that the employee was obliged to do when it was available, but that was not guaranteed. So what about other types of overtime? For example, purely voluntary overtime?
Although there isn't a binding case on employers in England and Wales, employers can be fairly confident that the same principles apply to other types of overtime. For example, as you say, purely voluntary overtime.
Why do you say that?
So we do have the Northern Ireland Court of Appeal decision in Paterson and Castlereagh Borough Council. While not binding on employers outside Northern Ireland, it's a very good indication of what a court in England and Wales would say. So the Northern Ireland Court of Appeal had no doubt that as long as it is normally carried out and is an appropriately permanent feature of a worker's pay, it should be included in holiday pay.
So what about other types of payment?
So the same line of case law has also established that allowances that are intrinsic to the performance of a worker's tasks should also be included.
So can you just give us an example of what that might be?
So the one that comes up most of the time in cases has been travel allowances. So they should be included in holiday pay, along with any other payments that are intrinsic to the performance of a worker's tasks. So that's the key phrase for employers to remember.
So that deals with quite a few issues, but are there any other unanswered questions from the case law?
So there hasn't been a binding case providing guidance on what average figure employers should use to calculate these payments. So employers can use their discretion there, although a 12-week period is probably sensible for most employers.
And does it make a difference that UK law provides extra statutory holiday pay over and above what EU law requires?
Yes, so it's worth pointing out that strictly speaking, the case law principles apply only to the 4 weeks annual leave under EU law and not the extra 1.6 weeks under UK law.
So technically, that means an employer could decline to pay these extras in relation to 1.6 weeks of its workers' annual leave.
Yes, but any cost saving may be cancelled out by the administrative difficulty of having two different calculations. So employers may choose to include overtime, commission and other allowances for the whole of the 5.6 weeks.
So that should be it for the complex holiday pay cases that have dogged employers in recent years. Are there any other difficulties on the horizon?
One forthcoming case that jumps out at me is Sash, Window, Workshop and King, in which the ECJ is considering when employers must allow workers to carry over holiday.
And it's well established that employers must allow carryover where illness prevents the worker from taking their annual leave. But the sash window case could extend the requirement to allow carryover.
Potentially, yes. In this case, Mr. King was a salesperson, heavily reliant on commission to make his living, so there were a number of years in which he did not take his full holiday entitlement.
So if Mr. King succeeds, do you think this case could open the floodgate?
I think so, it could. We could see workers bringing claims arguing that they should be allowed to carry over leave on the basis, for example, that their workload or a big project that the company is involved in has prevented them from taking holiday.
Do we know when that case is going to be decided then?
The hearing took place on 29th of March 2017, and it can take a long time, sometimes over a year, for the ECJ to publish its full decisions. However, the Advocate General is due to deliver a non-binding opinion on 8th of June 2017, so that's definitely a case for employers to keep an eye on.
That was a really useful update. Thanks, Stephen. And thanks, Michael, for giving us a helpful insight into what employers are doing in practice. You can get further information on holiday pay by going to our topic on paid annual leave. And you'll find this in the topic drop-down menu by clicking on employment rights and time off work. And we'll keep you updated on the sash window case that Stephen mentioned in our law reports tool. And that brings us to the end of this week's Expert HR podcast, which you've been listening to with me, Ellie Gelder. We'll be back next Friday, but until then, it's goodbye from us.